If you weren't born with a trust fund, but feel like you should have one, you are in the right place. Welcome to Old Money, a podcast dedicated to breaking down the new rules to living well and getting wealthy. I want you to build a life and a legacy that feels rich in every sense of the word. And while I don't have any insider trading secrets, I do have some secrets about how getting rich is actually an inside job. I'm your host, Amber Evenson. Now, let's get into it. In the wise words of Countess Luann, money can't buy you class, but this episode is here to help you lead a life of elegance. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast dedicated to helping you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. I am your host, Amber Evenson. Welcome back. It's September 2nd if you're listening to this on the day it drops. And is it just me or does it feel like the new year? This is coming from a woman who, as a child, lived for back-to-school shopping at Office Max. I think I've said that so many times before, but I know that's a cohort of women in this audience. It's the women that like to buy the notebooks and the highlighters and the pens because there's always a chance for a fresh start, for a reset, for reorganizing goals. And oh my gosh, maybe I should do another little bonus episode about what I've done for my September 1 start. Maybe I will do that because I feel so refreshed. I'm recording this on Labor Day, Monday, September 1st for you. And I've been so excited to talk about this because I've been thinking a lot about elegance and how that is such a framework for an old money way to be. And I wanted to explore it across a few different areas of our lives because I think a lot of people think elegance and they think etiquette. They think, how do you walk into a room at a country club or at a gala? Well, I'm thinking about how can we just be quietly elegant with our style, with our money, and with our relationships. I really think that these three areas of life and the way we show up with other people, the way we present ourselves, and the way we care for our finances can all be done in a really elegant way. But before we get into that, I have so much to update you on. So much has been going on behind the scenes. First of all, I'm so excited to announce that my brand new program, Old Money Mindset, is live and it's fully live. The entire program is up, ready with all the modules there, everything ready to go. This workbook, you guys, has been a labor of love. Okay, let me just tell you what it all is. Okay, so first of all, Old Money Mindset as a course is what I'm calling the foundational level course. And the thing that I think gets overlooked so much in a wealth building journey. And what it really talks about at the core of the issue is emotional regulation. Because what I've seen is that a lot of people are stuck in the same cycles of money anxiety, living paycheck to paycheck, feeling like you're never going to get ahead, dreading your money dates, all of these different types of habits we've talked about with the attachment styles. If you're in the same cycle with your money, or you're in the same cycle of fights with your partner or challenges at work, but you're ready to up level, it's going to take a different identity, a different way of being emotionally. And through my experience this year, I recognized I had so much lingering emotional residue and I was never taught how to deal with. And that emotional residue was holding me back from conversations I needed to have, boundaries I needed to set, and beliefs that I needed to clear. And the biggest thing for me was I didn't see anyone out there telling me what to do. Like, I'm talking about, first of all, clearing the beliefs. Like, you can talk about it all day long, but how do you actually in your body clear negative emotions, clear trauma, clear triggers, and then process it, move on? And then as I'm moving on, like, what do I say that's going to be better? How am I going to have a relationship that's not going to result in a fight all the time? What is the script? What is the thing I need to do? And I laid it all out in Old Money Mindset. And I know I talk a lot about relationships. If you were at the workshop Relationship Reset, I really dove into all the tea on what's been going on behind the scenes with me. But the reality is that our relationship with ourselves, our relationships with our partners, I mean, the person you marry is the biggest financial decision you're ever going to make in your life. So let's take care of the things that we have and optimize them so that we feel calm, clear, and collected no matter what's going on. And this has really come at such a perfect time because your girl's on TikTok, and I'm actually really surprised at how much engagement I'm getting in the comments on TikTok. I'm kind of blowing up, not to brag or anything, but around these conversations about what old money really means. And I think that societally, we've really overvalued the money part of old money. Everybody's looking at, oh my gosh, I wish I got a trust fund. I wish my parents had more money. I had a better lifestyle. What I'm arguing is that it's actually the intangibles, the things that get passed down from generation to generation that don't have anything to do with wealth, that is the most valuable piece of being raised in an old money family. I'm talking about your parents having conversations at the dinner table, contextualizing business struggles, or how to overcome adversity, or handling large sums of money, or how to be in different relationships and networks and societal groups. My thesis is that if your parents, or if where you were raised or who you were raised around, were oriented towards success, they are not going to have these mindset blocks. They're not going to have these bad money habits. They're not going to have these limiting beliefs. If they're oriented for success and achieving it, they have happy relationships, healthy, thriving businesses, they have good friendships, an active social life. They already have cleared or never even inherited the mindset blocks that would get in the way of their success. So that's what I go through in old money mindset. These are the mindset blocks you might have. I gave you literally like 20 of them that are pretty common. Here's the new way to think about them. By the way, here's the new way to interact in your business, the new way to interact in your relationship, the new way to take care of yourself, all of these things. And through the course, my goal is that you have a transformation that's as meaningful as mine. I mean, my life did a complete 180 when I actually finally understood what emotional regulation meant and what I needed to do to become emotionally regulated. I'm not kidding you. It went from constant fights with my partner that we could never resolve to me having a completely different perspective because I had finally addressed the deep-seated fears that I had around my relationship, around being in a partnership, all of the things. I finally was able to reparent myself and step into the version of myself that felt worthy and safe and supported in wealth and in love. Like, I am not kidding you. My transformation has surprised even me. So old money mindset goes through all of it. We're not just talking about money. We're talking about relationships, time. We're talking about purpose, health, all of the things, work, a lot of conversations about work. And I think the thing I'm the most proud of in this course is the workbook. The workbook is, I don't know, like 45 pages long, and it's full of tactical tools that you can come back to and reference. It's got workflows, it's got decision trees, it's got scripts, there's journaling prompts, there's core beliefs exercises. There is basically the shortcut to any question you've ever had about mindset in this workbook. I'm so obsessed with it. The course itself is 4 modules going through the wealth blueprint, the poor little girl, the wealthy woman, and installing a new identity. And the videos are all there for you pre-recorded. Starting September 8th, we're going to do 3 live calls in the month of September. I have additional lessons I'm going to be adding to the course. We have live call opportunity for you to bring any of your questions. So if you want a deeper dive than we go into on the podcast on how to upgrade your mindset, this is the course for you, and I have some gifts for you. Number one, enroll before Sunday, September 7th, and you can use the code COMMIT15 for 15% off. That's COMMIT, COMMIT, 15. For 15% off, plus anybody who enrolls before Sunday, September 7th, I'm sending you a free Old Money Varsity sweatshirt. And you know that's my favorite sweatshirt ever. It is so cozy for football Sundays. It is my uniform. oldmoneypodcast.com/mindset is the URL, and COMMIT15 is your discount code for 15% off. There are already some amazing rich girls in there. I'm so excited for their transformation, and I would love for you to join us. So all of that is detailed in the show notes, but also in Old Money Monthly, which is my new obsession. Just last month, I started a monthly newsletter where I go through all of the things that are making me feel wealthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, financially. So financial tools or interesting podcasts I've listened to or shows that I would recommend to you, all elevated old money style that's going to make you feel super expansive. So a couple things here. Number one, if you want to register for the newsletter and get on our email list, you can absolutely do that. I'll put the link in the show notes, but I also put it on Substack. because I know so many of you now are using a Substack. I'm using Substack. I love it. So if you're not a big email girly and you prefer to get the information there, you will get Old Money Monthly subscribing on Substack. Of course, the link will be in the show notes. I'm a broken record today. But also I'm really excited because I'm going to be adding even more value to Substack. I can record private podcast episodes just for our Substack subscribers, a little bit of extra. I'm also going to be doing some more, I would say, workbook-based type of writing so that you have tools that complement the podcast that we're talking about. There's all different types of learning styles out there. So if I go over something verbally on the podcast, I want to also give you a written component so that you can reference through whether it's a step-by-step idea of something or expand with a little bit more of a personal story. So it's all coming through Substack and you can subscribe for free for now. That is. Okay, another update that I'm really excited for everybody. It is time, once a year, I do an Old Money listener survey. There is a really simple Google form that you can do if you want to tell me a little bit more about you and what you want to hear more of on the show. So this particular survey goes through everything about you, like how, if you're employed, are you single with kids, single with no kids, what your financial goals are, your annual income, the type of debt that you have. And then it's also going into how you consume the show, how you heard about us, what you want to hear more of. This is your suggestion box of the year. I mean, you can always send me a suggestion, but I think this is a really fun time to kind of get a pulse on who is out there listening to us. And then of course I will share the results with you. So the Old Money Listener Survey is open for the month of September, and I will put the link in the show notes. So I think that covers all the housekeeping. Do you want to talk about elegance? Because elegance is learned, my friend. Elegance is learned. Oh yeah. And if you've never watched Housewives, you just turned off this episode and you are never tuning in again. And by the way, I will literally never listen to that back because how cringe of me to just do that. So let's talk about elegance. I'm so excited. A little bit of a lighter episode, something fun to just think about, chew on. And I actually think without recognizing it, it's probably something all of us are chasing. So elegance is something that is perceived. It's, of course, you can say that person or thing is elegant, but when we talk about elegance as an idea, it's really about the perception of refinement, of grace, of tastefulness, right? And the way that elegance displays itself is often very understated. It's often very simple and tasteful, as I mentioned. But what's interesting about elegance is that there's value to it because it signifies mastery or effortlessness. For example, when we talk about dressing elegantly, you're not overdressed, you're not in Balenciaga, you're not head to toe, you don't look like you have such a stylist. You have something that is natural or classic or just effortlessly beautiful. When we talk about a person's behavior, they're just refined. They know what to do. They're moving gracefully through a crowd or speaking with people, and they make sure that everyone around them is having an elegant experience. I mean, we typically associate this with fashion or decor or events, but I mean, if we talk about the abstract concepts, it also implies a sense of choice, a sense of taste, a sense of consistency, so to speak. And I think the perception of elegance is strongly tied to the old money aesthetic because traditionally speaking, and I'm always talking in stereotypes here, but old money families, like the old elite, they are established, they're secure. So they don't need to prove anything to anyone. There's a bit more of a focus on timelessness than trends here. And with that, the old money lifestyle, so to speak, is about cultivation. It's about purpose and legacy. When you think of an old money home, for example, you probably don't think of something that was completely furnished in brand new furniture from West Elm and CB2. You're probably thinking of a collection of curated antiques and pieces from travel and different friends and family members. And it gives this sense of permanence and security and lineage, which is attractive when other people outside of this family or place or event or thing are perceiving it, because timelessness connotates trustworthiness. And the human brain tends to process information easily when it appears to be something that you can trust, and something that is simple, and something that is harmonious, and something that is refined. This is actually known as processing fluency. So elegance really connotates, again, this hidden depth or mastery of a subject. Like, oh yeah, we've been decorating these homes for years. Oh, I've been getting dressed in these beautiful gowns for galas for years. Oh, of course my makeup is perfect. I've perfected it over years. Of course my money is managed in such a way that it doesn't stress me out because I mastered how to do it when I took Amber's old money mindset course. No, I'm just kidding. Because I mastered it for years. I mean, if you just boil it down, when I think about elegance, I think about something that is restrained and elevated and luxury and, again, the mastery. So a couple things that come to mind when I think of examples of something elegant is like a woman moving through a party as a host and seeing everyone and greeting everyone, holding a glass of champagne in her hand, enjoying a Blini with caviar while adeptly, you know, making everybody feel seen and heard and acknowledged. And she's enjoying herself. She looks lovely. She's polished. She's in a gorgeous dress. Or in business, elegance, I really always think of the Japanese way of doing business, which is so much about respect and trust and creating relationships. Even when you hand somebody a business card in a lot of the Eastern cultures, you're to hand it with two hands so that you show how much reverence you give to this card and how much respect you have for that person whose name is on the card. Even in countries like Thailand or Philippines, they'll hand you your receipt after you pay with both hands in a bow. It's a very elegant way to give gratitude and acknowledgement to the person you're transacting with. It's the way they've done it for thousands of years, and it absolutely shows refinement and intentionality, and obviously it harks back to tradition and transcends trends. Like, it's not about what's trendy right now. It's about what's really important. It gets down to what is really important, and I think that's what the study of elegance does. We're getting down to what is elegance. And so I have six different components of elegance here that I think that we could all implement into our day-to-day style, our money practices, and in our relationships. And the reason I think this is important is because elegance transcends wealth. Anyone can be elegant, no matter where you are, what station in life you are, or how much money is in your bank account. Yet, being elegant or acting elegant or aligning with elegance gives you inherent value, both to others as they perceive you and to yourself. And is there anything that's more important than how we view ourselves? I almost think of the practice of elegance as promises we keep to ourselves. Like, if we commit to something or taking something on and we are intentional and thoughtful and aligned with our values around the thing, it's easy to be elegant. So as we explore these six different components of elegance, I invite you to see which ones feel good to try on for size as a new practice as we go into this new season. And let me know what you think. Are you already doing these things and you haven't realized it yet? Do you start doing these things and see that people are perceiving you differently? Are you perceiving yourself differently? So let's jump into the exploration of how to look, feel, and be effortlessly elegant with your style, your money, and your relationships. So tip number one on mastering elegance, or this, I don't even know if it's a tip, it's just an area of exploration for elegance, is number one, mastering the art of simplicity. Now, I love this for style because your girl hates to shop. So this aligns with me right away. And the takeaway here with style or clothing is curating a capsule wardrobe. I'm obsessed with this. And the thing about curating a capsule wardrobe should, again, be number one, looking for pieces that have appeal across many different years, not like buying all barrel jeans in 2025. You're buying pieces that looked chic
this year, 1962, if you were Audrey Hepburn, you're probably wearing the same types of pants that I wear today because they just look classic. So not only are you going to have things that look good in many different time periods or different years, you're also going to be focusing on buying things that are of high quality that are going to last you many different years. Think of things like, you know, a great pair of pants, a great blazer, like very nice crisp white shirts or linen shirts, quality denim, pieces that do more by being well tailored. That's another thing, is just tailoring is so important. But the reason why this is so aligned with the old money mentality is because over time you're going to create an asset in your wardrobe, something that you can come back to over and over again that's going to give you really high cost per, or really low rather, cost per wear, but very high value. And you're going to decrease the mental capital around what do I wear. It's so nice to just always have a go-to item for a first date or a business meeting, and you never feel pressured to go shopping for a special event. You always just have something on standby. Just the amount of emotional load that has lifted from my shoulders once I started thinking about buying things I could use multiple times, I mean, all the better. So mastering the art of simplicity with style is one thing, but how would you do that with your money? Can you get a capsule wardrobe of dollars? Not necessarily. But when we think about simplicity, I immediately start thinking of systems. Simplifying your finances with a clear, automated system that works for you versus you always having to work on it. It fully cuts the noise so you can spend your time doing the things that really move the needle forward. I'll give you some examples of this, but just so you know, the course that's coming after Old Money Mindset is Old Money Machine. And it is a full curriculum that is all about how to prioritize your money, organize your money, automate your money so that you have a money-making machine running in the background of your life. And it's everything from making a spending plan, paying off your debt, using savings to achieve your goals in a way that feels expansive, not restrictive. And perhaps the most important piece, I think, of Old Money Machine is we're going to talk about getting started with investing. And I'm going to walk through with you exactly what you need to do to get started. If you are not fully confident on what you're doing, if you need a little bit more guidance and handholding, because the system to investing is the key to breaking out of wealth. I'm going to tell you something right now. If you're in your 20s, you need to do this course. Because if you follow the program in Old Money Machine, you could invest for the years of your lives that you're in your 20s, like 10 years, never invest again, and you would still be guaranteed a millionaire. It's just math. This is not a promise. This is not me overshooting or promising anything great. It's if you follow the formula, the math will math, and you will become a millionaire without any effort. Think about how simple that is. Think about all of the fear and worry that could be eliminated from your shoulders if you knew what the plan was, you have a system, you execute it, and then you know exactly the outcome, or you know exactly where your money goes and you don't feel chaotic about it, or you know you can buy that bag or that new pair of Bottega sunglasses I've been eyeing with zero guilt. When you have a system to your money, the chaos in your mind totally quiets. And when you have a system to your money, what you're doing instead of always freaking out or chasing your tail with money is that you're fine-tuning and tweaking the systems. I'll tell you what, it's the beginning of the month. I'm always doing my money date. And back when I started doing money dates, a lot of it was, how am I going to pay off debt? Where am I going to get this money from? Where am I up with my savings? What can I spend on these different categories next month? And this month, because I have the systems already in place, I did an allocation overview of all of my investments. I researched some new index funds I want to go into. I asked ChatGPT to break down my dollar cost averaging schedule. So easy. I was done in an hour. And now I'm on the road to really fine tune my investments over the next quarter. I'm super, super stoked. It's just easy because all of the other things are running in the background. My savings, my investing, my bill pay, all the things. It's just simple. I am not a big believer in having 15 different accounts. I don't think you should have 23 different credit cards so that you can max out all the points. I think keeping it simple allows us to live our lives without having money literally overtake everything that we do. I think it prevents us from making stupid mistakes by having too many things going on. And it's one of those things, I love this Russian proverb. It's something like, if you're trying to chase 14 rabbits, you probably won't catch one. And it's about having too many goals and too many things going on at one time. So the more simple your financial structure can be, and we'll go over the full machine, which is like a four-step process of exactly how to prioritize what you're doing with your money and when, you will feel so much happier, less stress, and you can just trust in the numbers, because I will show you the numbers, how it works, that everything is working out in your favor. There's just a little bit of work you have to do on the front load. Now, this next category we're investigating for simplicity is relationships. And this one was really interesting for me because I was thinking, okay, is it systems for relationship? And yes, Justin and I do have a great system for doing like admin tasks and goal setting and all that type of stuff. But I was actually thinking more about this as it relates to dating and just the self-worth of it all. Because when I was dating a long, long time ago, I used to really bend over backwards to prove to the men that I was dating that I was the right girl for them. And in bending over backwards, I was never, I would say, changing my personality or who I was at the core, but I'd probably overemphasize some things that I knew that they valued because I was so focused on winning their affection. And that kept me really distracted for a really long time from finding my person. And granted, I found Justin and Justin found me at exactly the right time in our lives. And we needed to go through what we went through so that we could come together at the exact right time. But I digress. I think one of the things that I did was I over-explained or I overperformed. And what I wish I would have done in retrospect was just let my presence speak for itself, of focusing on me first and being so aligned with myself that I could let them decide if they wanted to come and go without feeling like I needed their validation or approval or that I needed to be chosen by them. I was definitely a pick me girl for a long, long time. But now, and even when I started dating Justin, I was kind of practicing emotional minimalism, kind of like, here's who I am. This is what I want. You can be in or out. It's about clean boundaries, clear communication, and no drama, no attachment. And that's how our relationship really started. I was always like, okay, I'll hold space and no expectations. And we just kept hanging out and kept hanging out. And there was a time within the first few months of our relationship, I remember it so clearly, Justin and I talk about it all the time. I was driving us in my car north to Carlsbad on the beach. And I said to him, so what are we doing here? Like, what do you want out of this? And I think I caught him so off guard, but I asked that question in a way that I was like, am I going to choose to keep hanging out with you or not? Because at that point I was like, I know what I want. And if this person's not going to get serious with me, that's okay. I'm just going to go do my own thing. Clean boundaries, clear communication. I let him know exactly what I wanted. I got him to answer in a way that felt honest and authentic to him. But for me, it was so simple. It was either like, this is a fit or it's not. And before I had just over-justified and argued and looked for all that validation and tried to make it work, therefore spending a lot of my time with a lot of men that weren't aligned with me, that were wasting my time, all because I was seeking their approval. Does that make sense? Elegance is about knowing what you value, who you are, and communicating that clearly. And it's not about beating somebody over the head with it or fighting with them. That's not elegant. It's more of a quiet confidence where you can energetically say to somebody, I know I'm great, so you're either in or you're out. And I'm telling girlies, that is the way to be, not just in loving relationships, but at work and with clients and with friends and just anything, honestly. So item number one, mastering the art of simplicity. All right, moving on to item number two, I'm calling this fit over fashion, and that is giving Cher Horowitz, fat or fit. But when I talk about fit over fashion, this one had to be the obvious next step in the style category after creating the capsule wardrobe, because the capsule wardrobe only looks as good as the tailoring does. When your clothes fit you perfectly and they look like they were made for you, you look so expensive. And it looks so intentional. There's no slop. There's no ill fit. It's not about buying more. It's about tailoring what you already have because it makes you look competent and put together. And honestly, It looks like you've mastered your clothes. We're talking about mastery here, right? And when you have something that's like a well-fitted blazer, that's what I always think of. That's a piece that you're going to keep for literally the rest of your life. Like a solid tweed Ralph Lauren blazer, that's something that you keep and you pass down. That is what it's all about. So I actually have on my to-do list for the start of the season to take so much stuff to the tailor so that I can get it hemmed or fit. I also have to remind myself when I get frustrated when I'm shopping that clothes are made in a factory based on who knows whom, but not my body. I'm 5'3". My weight is changing all of the time. I'm going to need to continue to tailor my clothes so that they fit me, not the random person that Veronica Beard or, you know, APC had in their fit model collection. It's not me. Don't take it personal if you have to get your clothes tailored. It's about making them fit to you. Now, if we explore this in money, I think one of the things about building a financial plan that fits your goals and your lifestyle, I think we have to go super custom with this because elegance is personal. Like whatever is aligned with your values. And again, I think elegance really goes back to what are the values, like the Japanese handing you the business card, their value is respect and gratitude and admiration. What is the thing that you really value? Do you really value having a 400-person wedding on an island in Greece? If that's something that's important to you, then start saving for that now. Even if you're single, if you know that's what you want to do, own it and start putting money towards that goal and that experience. Or instead of trying to keep up by going with everybody to Coachella or Stagecoach because you know that you don't want to be dirty, you don't want to sit in the grass, you don't want to struggle to get to a concert, and by the way, you'd prefer to be outdoorsy on your patio, don't go to Coachella. I think there's a lot of instances, especially when we're younger, when everybody in the group is going, and it's that fear of missing out or that fear of not being a part of the group. Like, what are the inside jokes that are going to get made? Like, who's going to get closer? But when you're aligned with what's important to you, you can attract people and friends and different groups to do so many different things that are super aligned with what's important to you versus going along with everybody else's plans if that doesn't fit your financial goals or your time goals. Like maybe you don't have the time to go party in the desert for 3 days and then be hungover for a week, because I know I certainly don't. And in the relationship category of this section, which is fit over fashion, it's similar to what I said previously. Find a relationship, whether that's a friendship, a romantic relationship, a manager that you work for, a client that you onboard, one that fits your values. That is going to feel easy and elegant, just like your favorite outfit. But if you try to squeeze yourself into dynamics that are not built for you, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to feel strained. It's going to be a lift. So when you're evaluating how much of yourself or how much of a connection you want to give to someone else, I tend to think of it like a bullseye. In the center of the bullseye, that is my inner circle, the people who actually know what's going on. And I'm limiting that to like 3 people max, to be honest with you. Not everybody gets all of me or all of my energy. I have like 1 or 2 super close friends here, Justin, my mother, and I'm ruthless about moving people out of that space. If you listen to Relationship Reset, you'll understand what I mean there. But there's no relationship, no matter how I'm related to that person or societally, how people think I should be with that person, there is nothing that I'm going to compromise in that inner circle. If you're not in the center of the bullseye, you're in that second layer, which is friends. Those are people that I still love and trust and share with and connect with, but not all the time. I'm not always available for them. And maybe that's because of the way that their life is. Like one of my best friends, she has 2 little girls right now. She is not in the inner circle anymore. I'm not constantly checking in with her and her with I. She's in a different season of life. So she's still in a very close proximity to me. I have so much love for her, but I know that our energy exchange can't be equal right now. So she's just 1 step out from inner circle where she used to be inner circle. And we will eventually come back to inner circle. But like, you guys know how crazy it is to raise children. She busy. So it's no shade, no foul, no nothing. It's just that friend group is a little bit outside. And then the third rung of that bullseye are acquaintances. And these might be business contacts or people that I don't really love to spend a ton of time with because of their situation, their personality, our fit, so to speak. I'm not going to be seeing those people more than I'm going to be seeing my inner circle or my second rung, because that's where the priority needs to be. So it makes it really easy for me to say to somebody in that outer circle in the third rung, the acquaintance level, to be like, hey, you know what? I'd love to get coffee. Thank you for the invitation, but I haven't even made time to see my closest friends this quarter. So I'm going to be prioritizing my friend there, and maybe we can catch up later on in the year. I am so much about clear communication and boundaries, but if you're just making excuses and people are chasing you down that you don't want to spend time with, then you're not going to have a clear criteria of who gets your time and who doesn't. So intentionality with relationships and finding out who fits you over who's available or just trending in your life is so, so important to maintaining your peace, upholding the relationships that you want, and overall feeling like you handle commitments or dates or appointments the way that feels most aligned and elegant to you. Okay, item number three in how to be effortlessly elegant is to invest in fabric, not logos. And I mean this in a few different ways. Obviously, you get the style piece, but I want to start with relationships here, because this dovetails perfectly into what I was just talking about. Somebody who's always around, somebody who's trending, as I like to call it, that's come up for me a lot of times in life, where you have somebody that maybe really wants to be friends with you and you're not really interested in establishing that friendship. That's somebody that's there because of a trend or convenience. Or if you take this into the dating and relationship world, somebody might look good on paper. They might be a doctor, have a graduate degree, come from a good family, but you're just not a fit with them because of something. Some chemistry is not there. The values aren't in line. I think a lot of people go for potential, or they're going with the easiest option or the most available option. And that's investing in a logo, not a fabric. And I mean the fabric of the person. True connection is about having alignment in values, in goals, in the chemistry that's there. And that's not something that you can manufacture. And so when we think about investing in fabric, not logos, I encourage you to look more closely, especially at the people you have in your life socially or romantically, or even, this is crazy in business, it's the same thing, the people that feel like easy money. It's like when you're starting a business and you're going to take any client, even when you know they have a red flag, that's going to cost you more down the line for sure. You want to choose good clients. You want to choose good partners. You want to choose good friends. And that means going with the substance and the type of fabric of the person, not just what you think might be the easy win. With money, this has to do with building true wealth, not having the newest handbag. I mean, I talk about this in the course in Old Money Mindset, but true wealth is often very boring because it's usually hidden in assets or investments, and it's not usually something that you can see. If you prioritize your investment, your savings, or your skills over your liabilities, like having a bunch of designer debt or a flashy car, you're going to be better off financially because you focused on the quality of your money and what it's doing for you versus just spending it on something as soon as a new trend pops up. And you're gonna know how that feels based on the texture, I like to call it. And that's why it's called invest in fabric, not in logos. Because the texture of something that's quote unquote shiny and new, like the shiny object syndrome, often feels hollow or cheap or just fleeting. Where when you really tune into how something feels in your body, when you think about a long-term investment or spending on yourself, there's a surge of pride and self-image that happens that I just don't think can be beat. So here's an example from my personal life. We have a trip coming up to Las Vegas. We love to go out there. I know it's so tacky and cheesy, but honestly, we go to the Encore. We barely leave the property. We eat great food. We walk around and window shop. I kind of use it as a trend check. I love to see what people are wearing. I love to see what's in the designer shops. I love that it's all contained. I love that it doesn't take itself seriously. It's just funny and fun. And I love being around the sports activity. It's just a fun time for what it is. One of the things I also love about Vegas is the shopping. It's so easy to shop there. They have so much inventory. And I'm going to be doing some shopping because my wallet got stolen right out of a FedEx package by the FedEx driver, I am pretty sure, because he forged my signature. So much drama. Police report and full investigation are underway. But my wallet got stolen, so I need a replacement wallet. I have one of the larger big zip ones from Louis Vuitton that's for travel, but I need a little card holder to pop around my different purses. So that's on my shopping list for this trip. And then I was thinking, what else do I want? What do I want to buy right now? And I was thinking, ooh, maybe I'll get, I want a little mini flap from Chanel in light blue. I've had my eye on it for a while this year. I think light blue is going to become my new accent color because I can wear it with taupes and grays and blacks instead of just wearing all black. I want a little pop of something. And so I've been exploring that. And you know what? I still might get it depending on if we sign a couple of more contracts this year. But I also, knowing that I want those things, prioritized what I told you I prioritized earlier in this episode. My investment schedule for re-diversifying my portfolio and really realigning with even more growth that are outside of the VTI and the VOO. If I'm getting too inside baseball, let me just back up and explain. I have a ton of investments in large cap stocks like the Magnificent Seven. And the Magnificent Seven are the seven largest companies in the S&P 500. That's Google, Amazon, Nvidia, Microsoft, Apple, Meta, Tesla, and I'm forgetting one. I don't remember. I'm forgetting one, but there's seven of them, right? And so those I already own. I own a lot of VTI, VOO, S, whatever they're called. And that means I hold a lot of each of those companies. So I don't need to go buy additional shares of those companies because they're very well represented within the S&P 500 index funds that I hold, because the S&P 500 is not equal pieces of all 500 companies. It's weighted based on the size. So I wanted to say, where else can I invest in emerging markets or other industry funds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why was I talking about this? Oh yeah, because I was talking about the feeling that I had after I came up with this plan, and I feel so excited and proud of myself and know that this impact of investing this amount of money over the next 3 months is going to return insane value for my life. When I have myself set up with my investments that are all running in the background, like the ease in my life, the fun that I have to design these plans and watch them grow, and just the choice that I make to consciously invest my money into a system to grow it, that takes a lot of skill, and it takes me doing something that's disciplined. Anybody can go buy a Chanel bag. Not everybody can invest the way that I do. I just feel this texture of pride and excitement, and it's building equity with my future self by doing the things that I do and making the choices that I make. So it's not to say that I'm depriving myself of shopping or having the luxury and designer goods that I want or living where I want or living the lifestyle I want. It's that I'm going deeper. I'm choosing substance over flash. And the same thing goes with your wardrobe, choosing quality fabrics, quality pieces that are going to elevate the way that you feel, not just the way that you look. It's like wearing cashmere and feeling so cozy and warm and not scratchy versus having a shitty wool sweater that's a turtleneck and itches you all day long. And it probably has polyester and it's probably making you have a rash. And that's why when I'm going shopping, I'm looking at, okay, what are the bags? What are the pieces that are going to be timeless? A pair of Chanel slingbacks is going to be timeless. A pair of super high platform YSL heels, not timeless. Buying a bag like a Chanel mini that's just so classic and they wore it back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, now it's enduring versus getting like a Balenciaga bag or a reissue of the Chloe Paddington bag or grabbing something from Celine that has logos all over it. I'm really investing in something that elevates the way that I perceive myself, that I know is going to be long lasting. By the way, I'm always going for the caviar leather, not the lambskin, because the lambskin does not have the longevity. I've already ruined a lambskin Chanel bag, so we're never doing that again. But it's always investing in the fabric, the longevity, the things that make you feel really good about yourself, and the things that are going to really build your wardrobe, your net worth, and your relationship capital. Okay, the next one for me is probably the hardest. This idea of elegance is all about slowing down. Now, I have been told on this podcast that I talk way too fast. I don't know what it is about me, but I just have so many ideas in my head that I have to like spit them out so fast so I can get to the next idea. And the reason this is hard for me is because I'm also managing so many different projects and clients and things that I really have a hard time slowing down. But slowing down is elegant. Being intentional and thoughtful is elegant. Like, imagine yourself walking into a party. Do you run around, like, high-five everyone? You're like, hey, what's up? What's up? Good to see you. Goodbye. Okay, great. We need a drink. Da-da-da-da. Or when you go and approach somebody and you're like, hi, my love. How are you? How are the kids? How was work? You take the time with each person, with each interaction, and that makes them feel so good. It makes the quality of your interaction feel good. And then it also gives you this perception of just, wow, I can't wait till she does that to me. Elegance is about slowing down and being present. When you slow down, you are choosing your next action with intention. And that's a lot of what we talk about in Old Money Mindset, is that emotional regulation of choosing rather than responding. Because when you slow down and you can be intentional about how you dress, how you walk, how you hold yourself, you're going to present your style, your appearance in such a better way. When you slow down and you put a little bit of lipstick on and then you check to make sure that there's none on your teeth, that's elegant. Versus looking like Miss Geist in Clueless with her slip showing and her stockings ripped, and she never took the time to slow down and look in the mirror and right herself. And with money, it's the exact same thing, because as I always say, I do not make decisions when I'm emotional. And especially financial decisions, you should not rush financial decisions. If you are ever rushing a financial decision, you're likely to make a mistake, whether that's buying a home or buying a stock or accepting a new job offer. Everything should be done with intention to make sure that you pause, you research, you choose wisely, because long money is patient. Like when you're investing, all the investing that I'm talking about right now, this is all long-term investing. And so while it might seem like a good idea, like, oh, I have all this money, let me just put it in the stock market, what we know is that through dollar cost averaging and putting a little bit into the stock market over time, you're going to have better results. And that slow play is going to net you more stability, better average costs on things. I mean, you can't rush your money. It's going to grow. You just got to give it time. And the thing with relationships here, and this is what Old Money Mindset's all about, is responding, not reacting. And cleaning up your side of the street in a really meaningful way, so that when you come back to a relationship, whether it is in strife or in conflict, or you just want to improve upon it or have a positive relationship, elegance is about holding your center even when somebody else loses theirs. Like, just think about if you're in a fight with somebody and they're being horrible to you, and you're able to just calmly respond and say, thank you for the input, I'll take it under advisement. Like, how do you get away from being activated? How do you get away from being triggered? What if you have past trauma that's showing up in the way that you're cultivating your relationship? Like, your job is to sit down, go slow, be still with yourself and process the things so that you can show up in a way where you don't feel the need to react or respond right away. You can give the other person space to have their experience and then know that you sit in your values and what you know to be right and true. You can always hold your head up high, and then you're going to get a better result at the end of it. I'm obsessed with this new idea that we've been talking about slowing down and then really getting in control of the emotional piece of being in a relation with anyone, anything, even ourselves. I really believe that it is the most important skill that we need to learn as a baseline. And just to give you one more piece on this, I just posted this on Instagram, but Warren Buffett has this great quote about, you have all these feelings about these stocks and the stocks have no feelings about you. Being able to be measured as it relates to money or relationships is giving yourself the ability to think clearly and cleanly about things. It is such an underrated skill. So that's why emotional regulation is effortlessly elegant. Okay. The next thing, we're on number 5 out of 6. The next thing I think is elegant and very chic is when you have a signature. And what I mean by that is we talked about creating a capsule wardrobe, but if you don't style your capsule wardrobe, it's just going to feel like you walked out of Banana Republic with whatever was on the mannequin. Having a signature, whether that's a signature look or makeup or jewelry or scent, really gives you the opportunity to develop a personal brand in the way that people experience you. And I think that's so chic. Just having something that feels like you from, I'll tell you something, I just was working on, I have a signature scent that I make myself, like I literally am a chemist in my bathroom with these little vials and I put it together and it makes me feel so happy. I did a perfume making class a few years ago and then I came to these particular ingredients and then bought the ingredients, sourced them so I can make my own scent. So nobody else has my scent and it just smells like me and I get compliments on it all of the time. Or like my jewelry, you know, you're never going to catch me in anything but pearl earrings. Like I'm always in pearl earrings. So that signature and the thing that people know me by, it becomes part of my brand because branding is all about repetition. So whether you have like a signature haircut, like the Rachel from the 90s, that was a signature haircut that she became known for, or your everyday jewelry, or the way that you style your outfits, that is so chic and it's so elegant because it looks like, again, go back to what we think about elegance, it looks like you've mastered style. And that gives people a really high perception of you because when you're put together, but you're stylish as well, it really gives you this edge of elevation. So I'm obsessed with signatures. And in money, maybe you have a signature financial move. I think this is really interesting. Like maybe you are the queen of the Roth IRA conversion. Maybe you are a Project Pan girly. You are so good at living beyond your means. Maybe you're known for being the automated savings girly. Or maybe you're the person that always gives a super generous tip. I think playing with money and having a signature around it is so fun because what is money for if not to play and not to be a tool? Like one of the things that Justin loves when we go to Las Vegas, and it's like his hobby, is tipping. And now that we go to the same places all the time, okay, the Cape, that's even a better example. We just went to the Cape again this summer. And Justin's like BFF with the valet that's there. Like the person that collects your bags and brings them to the room. Him and Justin are homies. They had a hug, you guys, when we were getting in this last time. And Justin loves to not just give the money, but he will tell him, hey, you make my experience so amazing. I love seeing you. Thank you so much for everything you do for us. And he'll give him a really large tip. And I love to see that because Justin's forming a real relationship. And not for anything in exchange. Like he's not doing it with any ulterior motives. He just really enjoys some of the people that we always see there. And his money signature is being a huge, generous tipper. And they remember him. He remembers them. It's really about gratitude and the things that those people do to make us feel special when we come back every single time. And really appreciating their effort and all of the hard work that they do. Like, I don't want to carry my bags up to the room. So the fact that they do it for us is just like, thank you. Like, thank you so, so much. So having a signature financial move, I think is so chic and elegant. And it's something that people will definitely remember about you. And then, of course, in relationships, I think having a signature way to be in relationship, which is really about staying true to your values, is so core. Like, how are you as a friend? If somebody had to interview all of your friends, what would they say is your signature? Are you the person that's always late, like Lisa on Real Housewives of Miami? Are you the one that always has drama? Are you the one that's always dating a bad guy? Are you the one that sends the funniest memes? Are you the one that always, always celebrates a birthday? You're the one that's going to celebrate the opening of an envelope. You're the girl that's always going to be there for her friends. Like, what is your signature? Being known for how you love in relationships, I don't think there's any currency that's more valuable than that. And being that person, being reliable and being steady and having a signature, that is so elegant. Like, being known for a way to be, I don't think there's anything that people would appreciate about you more than the way that you show up in those relationships. So something to think about of what your signature is in relationships. And then the last piece of this it always goes back to, and this has been my archetype for this conversation, is this woman walking into a gala. Is it gala or is it gala? I'm not sure. Somebody help me. A gala, an event, a charity event. And she is walking through the room knowing she hosted, she's bringing everyone to the table, she's the one with the connections, she's the one that organized, she has the committee, this is her party. And she's walking through her fabulous ballroom and greeting her guests, and she's holding a martini, and she's just having a lovely time. She's elevated. She's taking time with everyone. Everybody's looking at her being like, I can't wait to get time with her. You're commanding the room. You're taking up space. And that is the sixth element of living an elegant life, is taking up space, but doing so softly. For example, walking into that room and being the one that everybody turns and looks at, how do you become that person? It's in the way that you dress. It's in the way that you show up. It's the way that you hold your shoulders back and your head high. It's the smile. It's where your eyes go. If you have a bright red dress, red lipstick, a beautiful alert smile, wide eyes, you're making eye contact with people, your shoulders are back and you're gliding through the room, that's going to be perceived as very elegant. But if you wear a dowdy black dress that blends into the background, you have your shoulders hunched, you're not making eye contact with anyone, you're trying not to be seen, that's not taking up space. Taking up space is powerful, and taking up space can be scary because being visible can be very scary for people. Don't worry, we clear that in old money mindset. But being visible is about allowing people to recognize you for the beauty that you are, for the value that you hold inherently, whether that's as a hostess, as a friend, as a partner, as an employee. Let yourself speak without shouting. You never should ever try to convince someone that you're a good person, that you're worthy, that you're deserving, because your power should be felt, not forced. And I think when it comes to money, this is about advocating for yourself and being visible, especially in the workplace, raising your prices when you need to, negotiating with grace, being firm about walking away from things that don't suit you, investing with conviction. Like, commanding space financially doesn't require you to be a hard ass or ruthless about business. It just requires clarity. It's like I was saying in the section all about prioritizing fit over fashion. It's like, here's who I am and what I do for you. And if you fit the dynamic of the client for me, then yes, we can work together. And it takes all of that charge away. If you're not trying to convince somebody to work with you, you're not in a sales position. You're just in a position where, here's what I have to offer. You can take it or leave it. It's the same thing with a relationship. Here's what I have to offer. You can take it or leave it. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. But like, I have no judgment of that because I know how valuable I am. So in taking up space with your money, that also means taking up space for the things in your budget or your money plan that are important to you, that are aligned with your values, to make sure that you are living a life that feels expansive, that feels elegant to you because it's aligned with your values and your desires. Now, with a relationship, we talked about this, like setting boundaries with warmth, being honest, most of all, being clear about who you are, what you want, and what it is you're willing to give. And remembering that you don't have to shrink to be loved. You don't have to change to be loved. Having confidence in yourself and what you bring to the table. So chic, so elegant. And then, of course, in style, don't just wear something that blends in. Like, what is your beautiful collection of pieces that you've invested in over time that you've tailored to perfection? What are all your signature pieces that add to your style? And let your outfit speak for you without shouting. You don't have to walk around with a Balenciaga logo on everything you wear. But when you walk tall with your head held high, your eyes up, your shoulders back, you wear something that fits your body well, you feel powerful. You feel magnetic. It's going to be something that draws people to you so easily. And that is elegance. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I had so much fun putting it together for you. Don't forget the words of Countess Luann, elegance is learned, my friend. So if you don't feel like you were born with elegance, raised with elegance, you missed all of the hacks, I got you, girly. That's what this podcast is here for. Elegance is learned, my friends. I love you so much. Let me know what you think about this episode, and I'll talk to you on the next one, okay? I love you so much. Bye-bye. Look at you investing in your rich life one episode at a time. You're not just listening, you're leveling up. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, or prayers, slide into my inbox at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or in my DMs on Instagram at oldmoneypodcast. If this episode made you laugh, think, or write down a single note, please do me a solid and rate, review, and subscribe. It takes less time than your morning scroll, and it helps this show reach more future millionaires. And speaking of growing the network, please share this with your ambitious bestie, your business buddy, or your secretly rich aunt. Please share the gospel of old money, and I will be more grateful than a trust fund kid on distribution day. Thank you for being here. I'm rooting for your bank account, and I will catch you on the next episode of Old Money. Remember, I am not your lawyer, I am not your tax professional, and I am not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners and their personal and professional development, and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice.